This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your deep comment double tap of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Soon as I stay by the spot, all these wanna gossip. Said I pull up in that foreign whip, all these wanna gossip.
Been thinking a lot about how we in the media, and I mean that broadly construed, all forms of media, think about our musical stars these days. And, you know, hip-hop media in particular is a much vaster galaxy than it certainly was in the era that I came up in writing or the era that I came up in reading. And the nature of celebrity in hip-hop and beyond is also very different in the digital era and, like, late digital era than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And oftentimes I see coverage of the people that I'm really passionate about or curious about musically, artistically, but there's a lot of coverage that, you know, I would politely describe as extra musical. And that's not to say there's no validity to the gossip ecosystem. At the beginning of the show, that was an old Ply song called Gossip. I'm a huge fan of that ecosystem, and I certainly check in on it multiple times a week. But it does feel that the overall framework for how celebrity in hip-hop is talked about has changed with the advent of Instagram accounts that, you know, post multiple times a day about romance or beefs or so on and so forth, with the expansion of the podcast ecosystem, with SEO optimized news coverage for websites. It's growing. A couple weeks ago, I saw on Twitter two journalists who I go back with many years, Jerry Barrow and Rob Markman, talking about the tabloidification of hip-hop media. And it got me thinking that we should really have a conversation about that, because I do think that if you just watch it happen and take it for granted, there's no reflection upon the moral component, the moral dimension, the ethical dimension, and also just is this good or bad for music, the music industry, music as an art form. And so joining me today, look, I've got three generations of folks who have been doing journalism, doing hip hop journalism on various rap internets over the years. Those of us who've been around for a long time know that the rap internet of 2022 is very, very different, even from the rap internet of 2017 or 18, and certainly 2012, 2011. Yeah, so we're going to talk about the long arc of hip-hop journalism, especially in the online era, and how we arrived at this particular tabloidified moment. First, Rob Markman is here. Rob, what's good, man?
Chilling, man. I'm, you know, glad to be here. I was waiting for you to call me. I finally got that call.
We had to get the perfect topic for you, player.
Yeah, mama, I made it.
So Rob is the VP of Content Strategy at Genius, has been at Genius a very long time, and also was a writer for many years prior to that. But you probably know Rob best from his long-form interviews with folks over at Genius and also just supervising how that content operation grew out. Jerry Barrow is here. Jerry, what's good, man?
What's up? How you doing, John?
Jerry is from my generation. I won't say how old you are, but I will say you're from my generation. How about that?
I remember stressing you turning in copy to me at the Source one time.
Damn.
It was a deadline. And you were like, Jerry, you know the copy's going to be clean when I get it. I'm like, all right. Okay, you're right. But you're stressing me.
legendary Caramonica comeback. Extremely legendary. Jerry, I might send you to a group therapy session with all the editors. All the editors I have done that to over the years. Y'all might have to do like a group thing where you can all just work through your trauma on that. I hope it was clean, though, circa 2000. I hope it was all right.
It was.
Jerry is the head of content at Hip Hop DX and obviously has been writing and editing for many, many years, whether it's The Source, Scratch Magazine, so on and so forth. And finally, Andre G is with us. Andre's a staff writer at Complex, the young bull in the room. Andre, what's good, man?
I'm good. It's good to be here with y'all, established older generations, I guess.
Whew! So Andre just calling us old, which I appreciate that. Thank you, bro. Andre has been writing at Complex and has been writing prior to Complex as well. But also, if you read Complex with regularity, you know that Andre takes on a lot of the hot button topics of the day with more depth and nuance than just a quick response, like trying to bring big picture ideas into hot button conversations, which I think is the optimal way I would hope that we would all want to deal with important things in this internet climate, but it's not always the case. The reason we're all gathered here actually goes back a couple weeks to an exchange that Rob and Jerry that I saw y'all were having on Twitter about the tabloidification of hip hop media. I think this functions in two ways, and I'm sort of curious to hear y'all expand on where the prompts for that thought were. To me, on the one hand, you have actual tabloid content, which is to say people's personal lives, IG post, who's liking what comment, etc., that's spilling back into coverage of rappers. But then there's also, even if you move out into the podcast space, there's a lot of coverage that is not strictly musical, but is becoming the dominant coverage that feels, I don't want to say it's not substantive, but it does have gossipy elements to it. What were y'all talking about? Rob, maybe start with you. When you were sort of having that exchange, where was your head at as far as the current climate?
It was funny, and I just read the original tweet because I pulled it. I had to go back because I wasn't even thinking about it that heavy. And the original tweet is,
that's where the good stuff comes from. That's, I appreciate that. Really? That's why we gotta gather it up and put it on podcast.
Nah, for sure. The degree to which rap media has turned into mostly gossip is insane. It's always existed and no one is really above it. Everyone gossips at some point, but the way the fellas in media have made it the dominant form of coverage is wild to me. And that was me more so just looking a lot at the podcast space and actually physically guys just sitting around, and a lot of it feels like gossip. And, you know, I'm from an era where when we were aspiring to get into this game, you know, I credit Wendy Williams with a lot of that architecting that in hip hop. And I remember listening to Wendy on the radio, and we necessarily as kids trying to get into this game, never thought that was cool. Like that wasn't what we aspired to be, or at least me and my group of friends. And, you know, but we're here now, and it is the reality of where we're at. And then when Jerry took it, and Jerry can certainly speak to his intent, and when that conversation started kind of popping off, I think, Jerry, you took it from more of an editorial approach. And I was like, wow, I didn't even mean it like that, but it certainly applies. And so it was funny how the conversation on Twitter kind of sparked off of that one thing. But I was actually, it was just like the physical, just seeing just guys kind of sit around and talk in the matter, which they do.
My reaction was definitely more to the editorial, but the podcasts now feed the editorial and dictate the editorial as much as anything now. You know, if the right rapper says the right thing about the right person, it becomes a headline. But that's not new. You know, anytime you can get a rapper to comment on someone good or bad, it's going to do numbers.
Yeah, I mean, and that goes back, to be fair, that goes back to the 90s. That goes back to all the awful stuff with Bad Boy and Death Row, Vibe Magazine, you know, the amplification of the tensions between Biggie and Pac, Suge and Puff. It's not novel. It is just, as you say, it's amplified right now. And it's microscopic. It's like so-and-so liked a comment on so-and-so's post, and therefore they must be aligning with so-and-so. And that's a news item now in 2022. Jerry, as like a content head of a website, a music-focused website, how much is that on your mind as you're setting your daily editorial calendar, as you're thinking about big picture coverage? Hey, how are we going to cover Kendrick Lamar? How are we going to cover Lil Baby? Big picture. How much are you thinking about that stuff on a micro level?
I'm always thinking about how we can cover it bigger. I'm just still adjusting. I've only been in my position for a few months. And it was after taking a hiatus from music coverage, actually. I had been at BET just covering film and TV. And, you know, I can't leave rap alone. The game needs me. They called me up and said, hey, we need your direction. And I've actually been covering the news on a daily basis for the past 6 weeks. And it's just as awful as I remember. I'm being dead ass. Like, y'all all know me. I'm not saying anything I haven't said to anybody else. I spent 6 years at the Urban Daily covering the news and gossip cycle because that was what was getting clicks. And I told myself, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. Went to Watch Loud and did the more in-depth stuff, the indie hip hop, the Q&As. And unfortunately, it didn't get the traction that the news did. And the gossip did. So it went under, you know, and I told myself, okay, if I can't do it my way, I'm just not going to do it. Fast forward a couple of years, here I am back, but I feel like I can hopefully bring some balance. But yeah, the news cycle now, it's crazy because anything someone tweets, anything someone posts on Instagram Live becomes a story. You got Instagram pages dedicated to just curating everything a rapper says. So that becomes a headline. And I'm here to say that it only works because people are actually reading it. I look at Chartbeat, I look at Parsley every day. I look at Google Analytics every day. And for example, before I came on officially Hip Hop DX, I resurfaced an oral history I did of Camp Lo's debut album, something I was very proud of, very proud of. You know, put in time, spoke to the guys, dug deep, and it barely made a blip. I'm not even going to lie to you. It barely made a blip traffic-wise. But if either of those guys had done something crazy, had been called out for something, and we reported on it, it had gone through the roof. And this is the daily battle that we have as content creators because I have to get enough traffic to bring in enough revenue to pay for everything else. So how many stories can you put out that we're going to get revenue from? Like, I don't know if you're familiar, the owner of Hip Hop DX, Sharth, he's a very astute and mechanical, methodical when it comes to his budgets. Everything has to be justified, so more so than any place else. But he's also been in the game for 20 years, so he knows what he's doing. He knows what's kept the site alive this long. And I saw going back, there were errors on Hip Hop DX when they were doing the more in-depth stuff, the long-form pieces and everything. He told me, Jerry, I can't justify paying this writer $800 for this piece, and it doesn't get me any traffic. Even though this is this great, well-written deep dive, this little write-around from TMZ is going to get four times the traffic and make me four times the money. So how can I justify paying that? And that's the reality.
It's agonizing to hear.
It's agonizing. It hurts me and pains me, and I try to carve out what I can. You know, we have our review section that I'm really proud of on DX. It's one of the few places where we can give opinions. But even I had to fight to get the reviews fees propped up because I'm like, I can't get people who actually know what they're talking about to write for this amount of money that you're paying. And this is not an insult to people who took the smaller amount of money. But if it's like if you want to get, you know, a John Caramonica review, you're going to have to pay a certain amount of money, you know,
and also grit your teeth when the deadline approaches.
Right. So
but the copy's going to be clean.
But then I have to say, you know, and it's funny, I thought about you, John, a couple of years ago. The other part of the game that's frustrating, you had gotten this Kanye West exclusive. And then I just watched as the whole game picked that interview apart. And that's the other frustrating thing. People don't understand when you work to create original content, when you go through the publicist, get the interview. And I know what you went through to get a Kanye interview.
Oh, you know what? You know.
I know. The headaches you went through to go through, get that interview, transcribe it, write it, get it up to something that you're proud of, and then watch 20 different websites just pick your story apart for the headlines and for the juicy quotes, and they're going to get traffic off of it and didn't have to do anything yes. for it other than read your article. And I'm not saying we don't do it, but that's just part of the game now. And it's crazy. I could not imagine back when I was at The Source that we would be taking a double Excel article and running it on The Source.
Right.
As an aggregated piece. Like, according to double Excel, you know, they said da-da-da-da-da-da. But that's standard now. That's common now. That is completely acceptable.
I want to ask Andre a question, but I have a thought on that first. So, okay. One of the interesting changes in the streaming era, and again, I'm showing my age here, we're used to a single to an album. We're used to a particular arc of a rollout, right? The nature of rollout has changed, broadly speaking, into this persistent drip of content, song-wise. And if you're someone like Migos, if you're Quavo, if you're Lil Baby, you're just dropping records or guest appearances just to stay on Rap Caviar, just to stay on Spotify New Music Friday. Because if you're not there every week with a new thing, you're going to drop out of people's immediate memory. To me, that's also how the news, quote unquote, gossip, quote unquote, ecosystem is functioning. If you're not in a headline, it doesn't matter what the headline is. It could be this dumb Jack Harlow YSL thing. It could be a random little baby problem with his baby mom thing. Like, it could be anything. But if you're not there with a headline every day or multiple times a week, you're not in the conversation. Andre, let me ask you this. As someone at Complex, obviously you're dealing with news, you're trying to do bigger picture things. How micro laser focused are you in paying attention to, like, damn, people talking about Lil Baby or people talking about whoever right now, like, we have to deal with this immediately. And maybe I'll take a step back and 2 days from now do a big picture piece or something. But right this minute, this has to go. How mindful are you and, like, the broader editorial team in thinking about it like that?
Well, for me, luckily, like, at this point, I'm not writing news posts as much. I am, like, cognizant just in a sense of just helping the team. Like, if I see something on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, I'll, you know, share it with the editorial team in the hopes that, you know, they might want to share it. But I did have more experience, like, when I was working at Uproxx, like, writing the actual news posts and having to be, like you said, laser focused on, you know, what's going on, who liked what tweet, what's the salacious news of the day, you know? So, yeah, I did have to be pretty focused on that. And it got annoying. It got to be like, you know, what does this have to do with hip hop or, like, the music? Like, why do I care? But then, like, you know, like Jerry said earlier, it's kind of like a feedback loop of, like, realizing that part of my income comes from people clicking on this stuff because, you know, that's what they want to hear. So it's just that give or take of it nowadays.
Also, Andre, I think when we talked last week, when we were first talking about this, I believe you mentioned, and if it wasn't you, I forgive me, but I think we were just talking about the love and hip-hopification of coverage, broadly construed. And I remember when Love and Hip Hop, the show, first came out, we all collectively understood that sort of stood apart from the center of the genre at the time. But what I think happened in that moment is it normalized looking at people, a Jim Jones or whoever, who we had previously only thought about musically or primarily thought about musically, and it provided all these other touch points to think about them. And then what happened is, I think, an ecosystem of websites and Instagram accounts and so on and so forth cropped up to handle all those other touch points. And it turns out that those are much more trafficable than straight ahead music posts. Rob, is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. But going back, you touched on it just a little while ago. I think it happened when we switched our terminology. You just were talking about the Migos and features and songs as content, right? We now consider songs on DSPs as content. News stories as content. Tweets and Instagram posts are considered content. It all falls under this. Once we switched our terminology, to talk about everything we do as content, I think that's where everything changed. It all happened at the same time, even the rise of Love and Hip Hop at the fall of the print era. You know, I worked at XXL for many years and started seeing the writing on the wall when the money was coming out of print and going into digital. In the print magazine, on the newspaper, you have a finite space. You needed to hit that word count. You needed a certain number of articles to fit the number of pages in the magazines, determined by how many ads were bought, would determine how big your magazine was. On the internet, it's infinite. It's as many stories as you could publish a day. The more stories I publish a day, the more traffic I get, the more posts I come. And it's just give me content. I just need content. I don't care what content it is. Just give me something to click. And I think when the industry started to shift and put everything under the umbrella of content, it was never enough. You just got to keep feeding the beast. And the easiest stuff to churn out that, like Jerry was saying, that was getting the most traffic is the salacious stuff, the stuff, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe he did that. Kanye did what? He said what? Okay, I don't have time to maybe read a whole profile on Frank Ocean or Kanye West like you're exclusive, but give me the headlines, give me the bites. And they can take your one Kanye exclusive, John, and the site can turn three or four stories out. I can get three or four different headlines out. That's when things started to shift.
Jerry, maybe I'm just at peace at this like late, like rap internet 6.0 era. Maybe I'm at peace. But the only part of it that really gets under my skin is when I Google Kanye West, and I'm not even in the top five Google results that day. you know what I mean? Because you'd think, hypothetically, if everybody's referring back, linking back to the story, okay, maybe that gets you up in the rankings. Maybe the SEO people at the office know how to keep my story near the top of the SEO. But no, within like an hour of the piece going up, it's like on page two of the Google News. And that's the hard thing.
SEO took all the fun out of journalism in so many ways. You couldn't have fun with the headlines like we used to in print. Now everything has to be SEO optimized. Make sure all the keywords are in there, the descriptors. And if you can manage to get something, create a headline that's catchy and SEO friendly, you're golden. But that's hard to do. And yeah, the digital component has changed everything. I was talking about this to somebody the other day, and how when Jam Master Jay was killed, I had to actually call around and get responses. And now you just go on Twitter and you just scroll Twitter to see who responded. And then that's your story. So-and-so responds when K-Slay passed recently. You just go on, you don't even have to call. I mean, thankfully, we still try to call to verify things. Because I remember that night, the WAC 100 post was what everybody was running with. And we were like, no, that can't be enough. So luckily, my staff writer, Kyle, she reached out to somebody in his camp, was able to verify. But I think we were maybe one of the first people to verify it outside of the WAC 100 post. But that doesn't mean we were topping the search for K-Slay. There's like 100 of the sites reporting on that. And the other part of that is it's not just hip hop sites. We're competing with Variety. We're competing with The Hollywood Reporter. We're competing with TMZ, who just now created a separate breakout hip hop section for their site. So the days of it just being Source versus XXL versus Vibe is way done. Now we're competing with everybody else for the access to the Cardi B's and, you know, the stories about Jack Harlow and Megan Thee Stallion, because they're pop stars now. So that's the other part of it that's made it really frustrating for me.
Okay, Jerry, you and I especially, we're old enough to remember how hard it was to get hip hop coverage into mainstream outlets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you remember what it was like in the 90s. It was not a guarantee, even for the most successful, even for like Puff or Death Row, the biggest artists, Nas, not at all a guarantee that anybody outside of hip hop media or maybe mainstream music media, like a Rolling Stone or a Spin, no guarantee that anybody would pay attention. Now, let me devil's advocate. Everyone is paying attention. Eyeballs are on us. Constantly, eyeballs are paying attention, and there is a genuine thirst. It's not simply that media is paying attention. Media is paying attention because there is genuine, widespread interest in these artists, in the culture around these artists, and in who these artists are as musicians, but also as celebrities. Like the idea that someone like Lil Baby would be a celebrity, a global celebrity. If you would have said that in like 1993, the equivalent, we would have been like, yo, that's a nice thought, but no way. Like, it's just not going to happen. And now that is happening. So maybe this is good. It's not, but maybe this is
no.
good. Okay.
my counter to that is it's why they're interested in them. It's not for the music. I would be fine if this was like how if it was all Genius verified style posts where we're deep diving into this, to the lyrics, or like, I don't know if you remember the one, there was someone did a Kendrick, they broke down Kendrick's verse from Nostalgia, and it blew my mind because I hadn't even looked at it that way. It was a video that someone said that he basically, I don't want to mess it up, but it was an amazing analysis, but we're not paying people and giving them the time to do that level of analysis for it to go viral. We have a beast to feed. We have a quota of 25 to 30 stories a day to meet. And it's easier to go to Lil Baby's Instagram page or to Gucci Mane's Instagram page and see that he just gave a fan $5,000 to find his bracelet and report on that than to go and do a deep dive into his lyrics and blow people's minds that way. But the reason why they're stars and their interest is because of what they're doing, how they're acting up, or who they're dating, which car they're driving, who they're beefing with. That's my problem. I would feel better if Puff was a star or DaBaby or Megan was a star because of their music. But it's everything but their music. It's their persona. And there's some good parts to that. Rihanna she's elevated her star status without dropping music. In the last 5 or 6 years, she's a bigger star than she ever was, and she hasn't touched a microphone.
You also just brought up something that we haven't even touched on. Not only are music-focused journalists competing with more lifestyle and gossip-oriented journalists, we're competing with the artists themselves. Every artist is a media platform now. Every time Kanye tweets, every time Megan posts an IG story, every time Lil Baby posts an IG, like I was watching like Lil Baby appear at like random bar mitzvahs on TikTok. And I was like, yep, this is content. Like this is, you know what I mean? Like this is content. This is 2021, 2022 content. So journalism, the notion of an independent journalist who is not simply going to repost what an artist is posting, is actually getting scary that that's less and less valued in the overall ecosystem and can be bypassed altogether.
Well, because everybody's reading this stuff on their phones and they want the bite size, whatever they can read and scroll and be able to comment on and share with their friends. And to your point, because the artists are on social media, even the fans can't keep up with all of it. So that's the job we've taken on now, is we're curating all the stuff that their favorite artists are doing that they don't have time to see because we're doing it for them. And that's a service. It's not so much journalism as it is an entertainment service of curation. But I still think we're needed because when we get to actually sit down and talk to the artists, it's our job to ask them the question, to go deeper into that post. Well, what did you mean when you posted that? Was that misinterpreted? Because that's the other downside. The artist can tweet something random and people don't know if they're being serious. They don't know what the context is. They don't know the history. And that's our job, to give the context and history and maybe even challenge the artist on what they actually meant and what the ramifications for that tweet could be. But I don't see that happening enough currently.
The idea that someone trolls Drake, Drake follows the guy's wife on Instagram, DMs the wife, and then there's like a Reddit thread, and then da da da. I actually low-key am happy that there's like 10 websites covering that, because I'm curious. Because that's also like, that's Drake, that's like essential Drake behavior. And like, no, it's not a song, but it goes very much hand in hand. Let me just throw to a break real fast, and we will come back and pick this thread up.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft.
Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
We're back with Andre G, Jerry Barrow, Rob Markman talking about changes in hip hop media and the centralizing of the tabloid mentality. I want to bring up a couple things that we haven't touched on yet. One, there are entire website ecosystems that are premised upon this. I'm thinking of the Bossips of the world, the Jasmine brand. Obviously, you can put DJ Vlad and Academics kind of in this, although slightly different than Bossip and Jasmine brand. There are entire media ecosystems premised upon these quick touch, sometimes controversial stories. And now, I don't think any of us are here today to tisk any of these sites, but they do serve a very different kind of function than the music journalism that we all grew up on. Andre, when you're looking out at the landscape, how do you see sites like Complex or what Jerry's doing at Hip Hop DX or Rob a Genius, how do you see them coexisting with these other sites? Do you feel like it's parasitic? Is it competitive? Where do you think they exist in relation to each other?
I guess to start out, this question kind of reminds me of stuff that Jerry mentioned with like how people are so used to like seeking like the bitey news and the short 200, 300 word post. Sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's just a graphic with a headline that says whatever happened, this happened, and then people comment under it. Outlets like that, I just feel like the environment is so unregulated. And I guess to an extent, there's room for them to report things that maybe a Complex or other outlets like wouldn't report that still might be kind of useful information. But then I also just feel like there's incidents like, you know, last year when the rumors started that the Megan and Tory trial, the charges were dropped because somebody went on the California Justice System website and like they misread the website. And then, you know, they just started a firestorm based on their misinterpretation. Whereas me, you know, if I saw that, I'd have to go through the few proper channels to confirm this, to verify, whereas they could just post whatever they want. So they have a propensity to be like more salacious and less worried about actual like fact checking. And as a matter of attaining metrics than other outlets, where it's like, we're trying to get the story right first. Whereas, you know, those outlets, they can post whatever they want. And if they get too bad of a reputation, they could just make a new account. And there's no regulation or oversight of what they have going on. So,
and what's interesting, like the Cardi B lawsuit against that blogger, this is an interesting moment. Because the other thing about the internet is I think I feel like when I see things on the internet, 10 to 20%, I'm like, it's not true. I'll wait for more verification. Like in my mind, I'm factoring in some percentage of this might be BS, right? But the Cardi B lawsuit recently was interesting because it was like, yeah, you know what? You're a person who's just out here saying wild-ish. Like, no, you can't say just wild-ish because you want to. Like, I'm going to keep you in line because there are libel laws that exist in this country to protect people from having falsehood spread about them. That was an interesting moment, but most people won't take the energy to do that. Most stars aren't going to do that. Like when that guy, I forget his name, tweeted that Rihanna and Rocky had broken up and he was like a gossip blog guy. I mean,
or that the queen like, died.
Yes, right. Yes. Oh my God. Jason Lee with the queen died. Yes. Although to be honest, have we seen the queen since then? I don't know. Open question. but there is the Andre, to your point, this unregulated space, I think, has reframed the expectation where nothing is fact anymore. I mean, obviously, you see this in right-wing media ecosystems as well. I mean, I think the structures of how news and fact and opinion kind of all commingle on the internet really, really screws it up for those of us who are only interested in fact.
That's definitely valid. I also think, like, you know, I recently did a report about the prevalence of, like, online investigators, which kind of, like, spells this out even more. Like, there are actual accounts, like, after the passing of Young Dolph, where people were, like, literally, like, trying to pour through the surveillance footage and different people's, you know, social feeds to try to concoct theories about what they thought happened. And I'm just thinking, like, yo, you're implicating people in, like, a legitimate crime. Like, there could be retaliatory violence behind this. You don't know the consequences of, you know, your posts. And that just speaks to, again, like, some of these independent media outlets not necessarily being as conscientious as they need to be on the consequences of the things they post.
Rob, do you think that that moral component matters? Because I am sympathetic to the thing that Andre's saying, which is, like, we're writing about, or not we, but these folks are being written about almost as if they're characters, not as if they're real people. The character of Drake did this thing. The character of Megan and Tory did these things. Do you think that what's missing is some kind of, like, moral or ethical imperative behind that?
I think as a society, probably our moral and ethical compass is all out of whack anyway, because none of it seems real. Like, I just think it's a societal thing. So, yeah, they don't see kind of Drake as a human being, you know, and more just as a character. I'm not mad at it. Like, I try not to be at a place of anger or it just is how it is. Like once you open Pandora's box, I don't know how to close it. And with Web3 coming and this whole metaverse and how media will exist on that, it might only get worse. Like we may cease to kind of look at each other as humans, you know, especially when we engage on the internet. You know, it goes back to the same thing, right? And we all get it. There's all types of Twitter comments you'll get. Like, people will say things on Twitter to me that they will never say in my face. And not because I'm a tough guy or anything like that, but it's just you don't treat people like that. It's easier to do it on Twitter. Even the guy who Drake followed, his wife, because the guy made a comment about Drake's son. At the end of the TMZ clip, he was like, yo, we should meet up. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you just see, like, the energy is never the same. I think the moral compass gets skewed online. And I think what each kind of reporter, media outlet, because you break it down, right? We all work for outlets, but there's individuals that run that outlet. I wouldn't be fulfilled working at a TMZ. And that's not even putting a value judgment on it, right? Like, that just wouldn't make me happy. Money or whatever just wouldn't make me happy. So I choose to do the thing that I want to do. I wonder if the folks who work at these sites and academics, you know, even on an independent level or whatever, if their work fulfills them. And if it does, God bless them. But, you know, I think that takes a toll on you. Like, constantly just dealing in that negativity, it would take a toll on me. That's what I'm saying. So you got to live with the choices that you make, you know, and Tasha K, who you said, who got sued by Cardi B for libel. Okay, that's the arena that you play in. These are the consequences that you're going to have to deal with. And maybe not everybody will go the Cardi B route and do a suit. But guess what? That door is open now. And if somebody's seen Cardi do it, what might stop Drake from doing it?
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with the mega famous who literally just have lawyers on retainer literally just to do this all day long. Like, you know, that's their job.
And once there's precedent, you know what I mean? For it just makes it easy and the floodgates to open. So that's a consequence that comes with that. So if that's the space you want to play in and knowing that that's a consequence and you can live with that, and, you know, God bless.
Jerry, is this bad for music? And again, I know that's an abstract question, but is this bad for music if the primary or loudest coverage of famous musicians is not music specific? And one side caveat to that, there are people who are famous A or B list rap stars right now who I think are better known in their tabloid headlines than for their hits. And so you have, like, an entire ecosystem propping up certain artists who I think don't necessarily have the musical longevity, but are very, very popular in terms of online conversation. Are those people taking up spots that excellent musicians should have?
I'll start with the first part of your question. Is it bad for music? Yes. And it kind of ties into what you were saying about moral focus, because in the past few years, I've seen artists who I respected and really, and quite frankly, grew up on, and seeing some of their opinions online about certain things completely turn me off to them. Completely turn me off. And it's a struggle for me to hear their music and not think about the things they said. And it's been hard for me. So that's the short answer. And are they taking up spots? Not necessarily, because there are going to be people who are interested in that type of person or personality regardless. People who are into Elzai are going to be into Elzai regardless of who the non-rapping rapper is that's, you know, out there. So I don't think it's a zero-sum thing. But it's bad for music in that this plethora of activity of what they're doing outside of their music colors their art so much. It makes it so hard for me. And some people can separate the art from the artist. I'm not one of them. Depending on what you've done and what you said, some things I can't rock with you on. And that's the thing that's been hard for me to accept over the years, because I'm like, wow, you really said that about this and that. And I don't even want to get into specifics, because then people will be like, oh, he's talking about so-and-so. I'm just going to keep it general. But it's been a lot. It's been a lot, particularly in the last couple of years, seeing how someone says, well, this is my opinion on this thing and why should it matter? It does matter, because your opinion is dehumanizing people. Your opinion is making people feel small. Your opinion is really contradicting what I got from your art, which was to feel good about myself.
I think that's super real, super real.
We also got to stop asking rappers, you know, it goes back to the old Dave Chappelle 9/11 joke, is like, let's get Ja Rule on the phone. Like, it's certain things, like, I just don't want to know about for my favorite. Like, I kind of don't care what you think about it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
facts.
Like, just as it, like, I wouldn't ask Tekashi 6ix9ine to give me a comment about Black Lives Matter. And maybe that's an extreme. Or, yo, what do you think's going on in the Ukraine? Like, yeah, I do wish I knew less about some of these rappers. You know, Kendrick Lamar's refreshing. Would disappear for 5 years, and then you drop the Heart Part 5 and get everybody talking about his music and social issues. And we learn about how he views the world. And maybe people don't agree. You know, I remember when he dropped the Black of the Berry. Also, there was a lot of pushback on what Kendrick's message was in that, based off of what was going on in the world at the time. But he put in his music and it was a dope conversation. You know, everything don't need to be a soundbite.
Only good rapper Twitter is Styles P, just for the record. If
anybody... I love Styles P.
Yeah, only good rapper Twitter is Styles P. You know, we didn't have enough hip-hop media in the 90s to say, okay, some people were going to cover more like traditional celebrity culture, and some people were going to cover more like musician. We didn't have enough. But now we have enough hip-hop media, and also hip-hop, broadly speaking, is much, much bigger. It has so many different little subsets that sometimes I don't get too stressed. I'm like, okay, if so-and-so is primarily covered over in the gossip side, that's okay. Maybe I don't need the full Rob Markman interview with this person, you know? Like, because maybe the full Rob Markman interview with this person would actually not be that helpful when it comes down to it, right?
Yeah, it was like the interview I did with Rich the Kid for Genius. I was just like, why do we do this?
Pray for Rich the Kid.
Sometimes it was like, maybe real. The long form doesn't work for this.
Look, I could interview many new or established artists, but I feel like I'm at the point where I'm like, who's going to make the best use of my time? Like, who's going to show up in a way that makes sense for me to talk to them? Because not everybody is.
You make a great point, because there's different spaces. And like I said, back to even my original tweet, it's always existed in some form, right? When we had the Source magazine, first of all, there were blind items in the Source too, and they were little, did you know, did you hear, right? Like that always existed. Ill Seed on the early days of All Hip Hop, you know, .com and all of that. But even in that era of the Source magazine and Vibe, there was Word Up, which was a little more fanfare, you know, who's dating who. Maybe it was more maybe fashion focused, who's wearing what. So, you know, what I'm saying is it always existed to a degree, but to the degree which it has overtook and become the dominant form. And look, through the years, we've seen that form of journalism become very, very damaging. and I could be wrong, somebody could argue against, but I think Wendy Williams in hip hop was kind of the beginning of the explosion of this type of coverage of hip hop, and her crusade to unearth who the gay rapper was very damaging, right? And when you look at it, and we all kind of paid attention, but if you look at it through 2022 eyes and look back at to what it's like, yo, that's wild. Or the Star and Buck Wild Aaliyah thing, you know, and with Aaliyah's death and how that was covered and joked about, and you look at that and say that's wild, but we keep pushing the line. It's hurtful though. There are consequences. That's why I would say I'm not necessarily judging it. It is what it is, and the fans eat it up, but there are consequences to it. Like, I think every couple of years it pushes the line till something happens and we're like, damn, it went too far. I feel like we're coming up on a "it went too far" moment sooner.
Like, I mean, a reckoning. Somebody's, you think, a reckoning hurt. Is,
yeah,
coming.
It absolutely, it has to.
The artists are pushing it back. Kalani is like, yo, bunk all your interviews, because what we're seeing now is you have interviewers who feel the pressure to get that viral soundbite, and they're asking stuff that's completely out of pocket. And you're sitting there and you know this artist is not about this, but you need to push their buttons because you need something to go viral. And then you're ruining a relationship in the process. And more artists are like, well, shoot, why do I need to come on this platform and talk to you when I could just go on my Instagram Live and talk directly to my fans? And then the digital sites will just pick up what I say anyway.
And radio, we haven't even really talked about radio, but morning shows, viral moments off morning shows, Breakfast Club, Ebro, et cetera, et cetera. It's funny, I was interviewing somebody recently, I don't want to say who, but basically like a famous person about some like an unfortunate thing that like another famous person had done that kind of like reflected back on them. And it just came up in conversation. And I was like, look, I don't care about this. This is not meaningful to the conversation we're having. But, you know, we just happened to talk about it. And I was like, it's not a big deal. I'm not dwelling on this. And he was like, it doesn't matter if you do, because the next time I go to radio, it's all they're going to ask about. And there's almost like an understanding, I think, in the artist that like you go to the New York Times for one kind of interview, but when you go to the Breakfast Club, it's a different kind of interview. And then when you go to Genius, it's a different kind of interview. And it's hard to do like a complete self anywhere, because people are picking you apart in different ways at every place.
But there's also the savvy artist who understands that and uses each outlet or each moment to get across a different thing. Let's be real. Kanye, during his promotion of Donda and Donda 2, right? He wasn't saying, hey guys, listen to how great my music is. It's dedicated to my mother. This is so important. The headlines, right? Kanye West allegedly spreading rumor Pete has AIDS. You know, Pete Davidson, Kim Kardashian, or Kanye does the handwritten post. Like, I couldn't believe this. I thought we were in the episode. I thought I was watching Mean Girls for real. When you guys remember this, it was the handwritten note that he posted that said, just so everyone knows, Cudi would not be on Donda because he's friends with you know who. We all speak in Billy language now. I'm like, what is going on? But the fact is Kanye knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly the thing that's going to get TMZ going and the headlines going and hip hop Twitter as well. They're going to talk about that more and obsessively than they talk about the music. So there are savvy artists who are using that to their advantage. You know, Jay said, oh, I might call paparazzi on myself. There are absolutely rappers who are calling TMZ, yo, I'm going to be here, come meet me. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Andre, one of the things that you write about so frequently is, we're recording this on the day after the YSL Young Thug RICO indictment was handed down. A lot of times I feel like the way that crime or alleged crime stuff, beefs, is covered very similar to how gossip is covered. It's a little dehumanized. There's a distance between real life and kind of how people perform these kind of tensions on the internet. Whether they're actual performances or not is kind of immaterial. The minute it goes onto the internet, it becomes quasi-performed. Andre, tell me a little bit about your thoughts on this mentality of persistent coverage, microscopic scrutiny, but when it comes more to much, much harsher realities of rappers' lives.
I just feel like, for me, my motto or just moral basis when I'm writing about crime or anything in that realm is like, I don't want to write anything that's going to end up like in a courtroom in a negative manner, being like negatively used against an artist. That's my main thing. And then also just feel like, like you said, a lot of these outlets, they're just so predicated on just putting something out to get the engagement that they're not fully considering, like you said, the ramifications of inflaming violence. And sometimes it's not even the artists. It'll be like people around the artists, a more local thing. We've seen that in different cities, Chicago, Jacksonville, where people with even just proximity to the artists who might be in the streets or whatever, still like, you're complicit in a climate of like inflaming violence. It just kind of like draws out the links of like the lucrativity of like nonsense and violence and like Black death specifically in a way that's kind of ghoulish to me.
And just to add on, maybe, because there's such a fine line, right? A genius, I could kind of give an example. We have our series Verified where artists come through to break down their lyrics, right? So imagine a world where we could get Jay-Z to come break down Takeover and Nas to break down Ether. Or Drake to break down the lyrics to Back to Back and Meek to break down the lyrics to His Side, right? I think these are, and I cite these because these are largely rap beefs that stayed in the studio with a back and forth. First of all, amazing content, right? Great for those that love the culture and the art and the sparring, almost like boxing, you know, the sweet science of battle rap. It would be amazing. And I would jump at the opportunity. You know, we have been requested from an artist to break down the diss record a little more recently between two Warren artists that absolutely had the ability to spill into the street. Like, people on both sides were already dying. So, yo, I want to come down and break the lyrics to this record. And I had to say, no, you can come do another record, but not that one. And it would have got us a lot of views and all of that. It just didn't want to be a part of something that like Andre said, would lead to Black death, would lead to somebody losing their life. Like, it's not worth it. How much is 5 million clicks worth? You know, it goes back to that moral compass thing. Now, I'm cool. I hope you settle it. If I can help you guys kind of squash this thing, I'll do it, but I'm not adding fuel to it. It's just not worth the views. It's not worth, like, me laying down at night, you know, knowing what we contributed.
That's the perspective of someone who's of the culture and knows what these consequences are. Like, when we had Feds and Don Diva covering this type of stuff, it was people who were actually part of that culture who knew, okay, I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to write about this because I know this has real ramifications. Now everybody is reporting on this stuff. Like, it's like you said, it's just regular news. But they don't understand that there's real repercussions to getting them to say a certain thing about a certain person. And that's why we've gotten so far away from the actual street in these situations.
And let me say that, man, that you bring up Don Diva, because before getting on at XXL, I freelanced a lot from Don Diva and learned a lot of my journalism chops from Tiffany Childs and Kevin Childs. You know, it was an independent operation, family run, but they knew the law and they knew the temperature in the street. Hey, this is how you write this. This is how you approach this. So I credit a lot of what I learned, and even that decision, I ain't even connected to Jerry until you said it, but came from early on writing in Don Diva magazine. So shout out to Tiffany, man. Shout out to Kevin.
I feel like this is a hard conversation to have. This is an ecosystem that we all love. We've all participated in. We all believe in the best of what it can be. What happens next? Because to me, when I think about what's going to happen 3, 5, 10 years from now, and Rob, you touched on this a tiny bit with the Web3 stuff, I only see more atomization, more friction. And like I said before about the kind of like how in the streaming ecosystem, you always have to have like a touch point every week, a new touch point. It's going to seem strange. Like what Kendrick does, disappears and comes back. That's not how new artists are going to think about it. They're going to say, I want to get attention however I can get attention. And if I can get attention from a great new song, phenomenal. If I can get attention from a viral Instagram or TikTok, phenomenal. If I get attention because of who I'm dating or who people think I'm dating, who I'm beefing with, who my ops are, that's also fine as long as I'm in the conversation. That's the direction that it feels like it's already in and really heading towards. And I see this also certainly with the New York drill stuff as well, like on a very micro level. I feel like that's happening for real. So what's next? Where's it going? And are there breaks that can be put on?
I think a reckoning is coming, man. I think it's going to be another moment.
How's that
going to
look?
Like,
you think it's like someone's going to die? Like that kind of reckoning?
I hope not. I
hope
not
too. I don't want to put it in the world.
You know,
that,
and I'm not wishing that, but you know, the death row vibe, bad boy. And that was happening in hindsight, because in real time, we weren't all the way saying that. It was like, looking back on it, it was like, oh, the media didn't really help this. And I think it's that kind of reckon. Like, something is going to happen to make us stop and reevaluate what we're all doing. And the collective we, not somebody sitting on a mountain holier than now saying, y'all shouldn't have done this. The collective we, as the culture that we speak about, what we're all doing. There's going to be a pause moment. You know what I mean? Where I think collectively we're going to look at this issue and be like, yo, we went too far.
Andre, what do you think about that?
When Rob says, like, we, I almost wonder, like, we who? Because, like, we're getting to a generation of people who, like, this climate, this online model, this atmosphere is all a lot of the younger generation knows. So it's like, it feels like we've already seen moments where people have died and rap beefs kind of just continue and it's still going. Like, I don't want to say any names, but it's like, it's going on where people have died and it's just still, people are still fanning the flames. People are still talking about who diss songs and, you know, so I don't know. I just feel like the lucrativity of the model for like independent media outlets and even maybe certain websites, it's to the point where, I don't know, why would they condemn themselves and stop what's working for them? And then, like you said earlier, John, like, I spoke with an artist and he was referencing, like, the desire to go viral. And he was telling me, like, I'd rather be on, like, academic sort of Say Cheese than have, like, a Pitchfork post or something of, like, of that nature, just because of, you know, he knows the audience that he's tapping into and what they pay attention to. So I just feel like, you know, like you said, things are kind of cycling in a worse direction where the model that we have is just going to be further entrenched and there's going to be more maybe negative developments to make it even worse.
And that artist is absolutely right, too, Andre, like in terms of the Say Cheese or the academic post, like it fuels a career, right? So, I mean, look, man, I hope not. You know, the other just really kind of interesting point, and I'll leave it there, is not to get all doomsday. But it is interesting, too, is that the internet has opened things up so much and is so anonymous that I usually talk about the collective we and I talk about the hip hop community and people who come from the places we come from and experience the things that we experience and the consequences. So much of this is being fueled and judged and by audiences that never have to deal with the consequences. Like, it's all just entertainment. Like, I told 50 this once years ago, right? Get Rich or Die Trying, right? Obviously, the music is a classic. It was an amazing album, right? But there were people who tuned in because 50 was dangerous, right? This was post Pac and Big, and it felt like the most dangerous thing in hip hop going on was 50 Cent. I largely believe a lot of people tuned in to 50 in the beginning to see the Die Trying part and not to Get Rich. And when 50 gets rich, it's not as interesting. We still have to think about, you know, hip hop music as Black culture and entertainment in America with a large white audience. And there's complexities that come with that. A lot of people are watching this and don't have to deal with this and fueling and fanning the fire. You don't know who's leaving that comment egging rapper A on to diss rapper B, or, you know, the opposite of this. We're also being egged on by a community that doesn't have to deal with this at all.
And the distinction between seeing someone as a character and seeing someone as a human, to go back to what Andre was saying.
Exactly.
Jerry, bring us home a little bit. Where's your optimism or pessimism right now?
I'm surprisingly an optimist, because I wouldn't have taken the job I just took if I wasn't an optimist to some degree. Even though I turned my nose up at my title, the head of content, I had to realize that this is the game now. And I'm overseeing not just editorial, I'm overseeing video and social and trying to bring those all together in something meaningful. And that's just the way things are. But I have to believe that the artists and the readers are hitting a saturation point where they want something more. They're going to want something more substance. Case in point, the Pusha T rollout, the interviews he's done, primarily the focus of his interviews have been his music and what he's been in his content. And it's ironic because everybody says all he talks about is coke. But if you look at his interviews and listen to his Drink Champs, he's talking about his music in a way that got people engaged. Kendrick right now just put out one song that people are going to be dissecting and picking apart and analyzing probably for the next few weeks until the whole album comes out. So I feel like both, it's going to take a tandem relationship between the artists and people like us who actually care about, you know, the art to kind of steer us back in the direction of talking about what they're creating as opposed to, you know, and yeah, you have to talk about the lives that inspire the art as well. You know, No Malice coming back to rap is relevant because he left And because he was like, you know what? I don't feel good about what's going on now. So the idea that he's coming back is relevant, and that feeds into that. So we need to have people who care about that context. Fans are getting bombarded with information, and they don't even know what to do with all of it half the time. So it's my hope, this is just my hope, that we can get to a point where we're curating something meaningful for them rather than just what the random thing is that they said or did that was silly. But what about the thing that touched them? What about the thing that inspired them? What about the thing that moved them? We'll get back to that. And it won't be all of it. We're still going to have the junk food. The junk food is going nowhere. But I was just at the New Fronts for Warner Music last week and ran into Just Blaze because he's got his sneaker podcast coming out. And he was like, yeah, I've seen how TMZ you guys have gotten, but we need balance. And I said, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, is just bring more balance to it. So I'm not going to be able to get rid of those 20 posts of junk food, but I hope to give you at least 10 or 5 that will make you say, wow, I really enjoyed reading that, or wow, that really mattered. So that's that. I'm an optimist for that reason alone. Because if after a couple of years, I see that I can't make any change, I'll walk away again. I walked away once. I have no problem walking away again.
You don't. That little bit you went on a minute ago about what touches people, I mean, damn near brought a tear to my eye, Jerry. That's what we do it for. No, it's real, because that's really what it is. That's really what it is. And like, I think we all, in our different ways, in our different forms, different generations, like we all do the work that we do in order to feel the thing that you just tried to identify. And it is always my hope. And I think it's my hope for the people who listen to this show. I think the people who listen to the show are curious and dedicated and passionate and want this thing that we're talking about. It's my only hope that we are all collectively allowed to continue to provide that thing, and that the algorithms don't bury it constantly. Guys, thank you so much. Thank you, Andre. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Jerry. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email me, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Get on the Discord. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, yada, 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 yada. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Let's go out. Jerry, this is for you. Let's play Camp Low. That is a very special album that you mentioned before. So let's go out with Luchini. This is it.
Word.
This is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Jiki finds the sugar dance, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and see the Vega and get lit, what? Introducing Phantom of the Dark, walk through my heaven with levitation from reefers, drenching deep as an E7 showboating.
Parents, when you visit California, childhood rules. If you don't remember how awesome childhood is, just ask yourself.
What would kids do?
Dance to a giant organ played by ocean waves? Yep. Camp in floating tree houses hundreds of feet off the ground? Check. Jump in a big tub of mud on purpose? Call it rejuvenation. We don't care. Just pack your fun pants and let childhood rule your family vacation. If you need help, ask your kids. Start planning at visitcalifornia.com.